Hi, I'm Josh, and welcome to the Wild Nature Photography Podcast, the podcast that talks the art, the craft, the packing, and a little bit of a review of nature photography. It is the 1st of February, 2023, and this is podcast number 63. And the topic of this podcast today is going to be packing for Iceland and the Arctic Fox Expedition, but I also want to give my thoughts on the Canon RF, 100 to 500 millimeter lens. This is the f4.5 to 7.1 lens. When I initially poo-pooed, maybe we'll just get straight into that and sort of get the ugliness out of the way. When this lens was announced, I looked at it and I thought, you know what? It's just a little bit slow for wildlife. f7.1 at 500 millimeters is not ideal. I'd rather shoot my 600 millimeter f4. I put off purchasing this lens because of that thought, and it really, it wasn't the right thought. It was, I didn't give the lens a proper go, and it wasn't until many months later that I actually tested the lens properly in Greenland, photographing icebergs from the ship on my Greenland expedition in September, October last year. That's really when I got a chance to first test this lens properly, and what I found out was that this is an absolutely fantastic lens. The focal length, the ability to have a focal length from 100 to 500 millimeters, can't seem to speak today, from 100 to 500 millimeters in the field, is incredibly useful and really, really goes a long way towards offsetting that slightly slower f-stop of 7.1. Well, by the way, it's only f7.1 at 500 millimeters. You know, at 100 millimeters, you're at f4.5, and it obviously changes as you go out from there. But what makes this lens so versatile is just that zoom range, the ability to go from 100 to 500 quickly in the field in a very small, very light, very compact lens that is sharp all the way through its zoom range really makes this lens just about a must-have, I think, for not only wildlife photographers, but also landscape photographers who can't always zoom with their feet. So if you're doing any landscape work from ship, or you're doing any sort of landscape work that requires a long telephoto lens, I think the 100 to 500 is absolutely superb. Now, it doesn't replace the need for a 70 to 200 2.8. I still believe there's a need for that lens. I'm actually packing both to take to Iceland. I'll come to that in a minute, because there are times when I do want 2.8 in the field, and that does make a difference, particularly in low light. So the 100 to 500 is going to struggle a little bit in low light. I think in situations like perhaps Finland in September, October, where the light levels are very, very low, photographing things like wolves and wolverines from hides, there f7.1 might be a bit of a struggle as the light levels get low. It's just going to mean bumping up the ISO a little bit more than perhaps I would have on a 600 f4. That's less of an issue nowadays than it used to be because of all the denoising programs that are out there and how good they are. I've been using Topaz's denoise a lot for high ISO images, and it just does an incredible job in cleaning them up. There's what we've seen, I think, technologically wise with denoising images in the last 24 months has been leaps and bounds ahead of where it used to be. So I'm very excited about that. It means lenses like the 100 to 500 at f7.1 are now much more usable because we can clean up that noise. Now, the lens does come with a tripod collar, which is removable. The lens is light. I mean, even with the tripod collar attached to it, so I haven't bothered to remove it for field use. I just don't really see the need. I like the way that Canon has maintained on this lens a 77 millimeter filter thread. That means I can carry one polarizer for my 14 to 35, my 24 to 105, my 70 to 200, and my 100 to 500, and one polarizer to do all those lenses. I think that's really fantastic as well. Canon has really knocked it out of the park with these RF lenses. Perhaps the only downside to the 100 to 500 is it doesn't really work with converters. You can actually make a converter fit. Not at 100 millimeter, but certainly at 250 millimeters and more, you can make a converter work because the lens is a zoom design where it moves in and out. But it's not designed to use with converters, so I wouldn't recommend it. I certainly don't plan to use it that way. But this is a lens that I have started to recommend a lot to people who are getting into wildlife photography, want to have a taste of wildlife photography, but don't want to go out and buy a $20,000 600 millimeter f4 prime lens. This is a much more affordable option. I think in Australia now it's retailing for something like $4,800. something like that, maybe a little bit less to, if you shop around a little bit. That just makes it a real bargain compared to a big, big telephoto prime lens. Even a 400 2.8 or a 600 f4, 500 f4, any one of those lenses is going to run you probably close to four times the price of this 100 to 500 millimeter lens. So I've been recommending it a lot to people. I think for travel, for wildlife, for people who don't want to travel with big, heavy lenses. Not that these new big telephoto primes are all that heavy. They're not. But they are bulky and they do take up a lot of space. And this lens doesn't. So I highly recommend that you look at this lens. If you are shooting Canon, I think it's a wonderful addition to your lens arsenal for wildlife. And a lens that you're going to see me traveling with a lot, lot more in the future. I used it a lot when I was photographing the palace cat in Mongolia. Just a couple of weeks ago, or just over a week ago now. Again, just that versatility in the field of being able to go from 100 to 500. Now, it doesn't quite have the same look, especially from a bokeh perspective of something like a 600 f4. But then again, it's a quarter the price. And it has an incredible ability, as I say, to be able to zoom quickly in the field. Now, if you buy one of these lenses, like any zoom lens, there can be some copy variation between them, and it's worth just testing it. The very first one I got from Canon was just a little soft at 300 millimeter. So I ended up returning it. I got another one. I tested it at every focal length, so 100, 200, 300, 400, 500, and absolutely perfect, right to the corners. So very, very happy with that lens, and it's coming with me to Iceland. So let's talk about packing for Iceland a little bit and what's going with me and why. I guess the first thing to say is, obviously, I'm taking two Canon EOS R3s. They're my cameras of choice. I know them. I love them. If you've listened to my podcast, you know I can't rave enough about them. They're the bee's knees for me in terms of wildlife cameras. And then at the wide end, I'll take a 14-35 f4. Primarily, that will just be for some landscape snaps, potentially maybe some northern lights if we get some northern lights. I will take my 70-200 2.8. And that is because I know from experience I can get quite close to the Arctic foxes. And in low light levels, the 70-200 has that 2.8 benefit. So I want to have that lens with me. I'm also obviously packing the 100-500 that I just talked about. And then my 400mm 2.8 for the same reason. Again, I want to have a 2.8 long lens with me. All of this fits in my two Pelican cases, which both go as carry-on. And I'm also taking a Profoto A2. I think it's an A2 or an A10. I can't remember the model number now. But it's a small portable flash or strobe that I'm going to use when light levels get extremely low for backlit shots of Arctic fox. Well, that's what I hope to use it for. I've actually just upgraded my trigger to the new Profoto Pro Connect trigger, which now gives full feedback on the trigger itself. That sits in the hot shoe on the camera, so I can actually see what power I've got the light set to. It used to frustrate me on the old Profoto hot shoe adapter that you couldn't do that. You could adjust the flash up or down by two stops, but you never knew exactly where you were unless you walked over to the flash to check it. Now, with full feedback on the Profoto Connect, Profoto Connect Pro, I think it's called, I can now see exactly what I'm doing with the flash, so I'm quite happy about that. So the A2 or the A10 is going with me, and a couple of grids as well, just a 10 degree and 20 degree grid for that, so I can control the spread of light a little bit. So that's something I hope to get a chance to use when light levels get extremely low. The Arctic foxes typically stay active, even in the evening, so I'm hopeful that I'll get a chance to use this. I have tried this before once with the B10, which is a much, much larger flash, but I found that it was too big. It was a little bit too intimidating to the fox. It didn't want to come near it. This A2 or A10 is a lot, lot smaller. And, you know, I'm hoping will be far less intimidating towards the fox and that they won't mind walking in front of it so I can use it. And my intention is to try and use it with high-speed sync for backlit shots. So I've got something very specific in mind for that. We'll see whether it works. It's something I have tried before. I tried it with Wolverine in Finland in winter. Unfortunately, I got one shot off and it didn't work. The Wolverine was just extremely elusive on that trip. And then I have tried it once before with the Arctic Fox, as I said, but that was with a B10, and that's a much larger strobe that the Fox just wasn't comfortable coming to. And then in other terms of equipment, I am obviously going to take my new Swarovski binoculars, the 12x42 Pures. These are ridiculously good binoculars. Yes, they're incredibly expensive. I think I paid $4,500 for this pair of binoculars. But that's a lot of money. But the reason I decided to spend the money was binoculars, first of all, don't wear out, provided you don't break them or run over them, like I ran over my old Leicas with my snowmobile. They will effectively last forever. And the quality of these binoculars is just so incredibly good. That little bit of extra zoom or magnification power being a 12 by makes a huge difference when you're comparing it to a 10 by. There's almost no sacrifice in the field of view compared to a 10 by. Plenty of light gathering as well at a 42 aperture. And as I said, just incredibly sharp binoculars and light too. They're much lighter than my old Leicas. So I actually donated my Leicas. I actually had them repaired here in Melbourne, and I actually donated them to my guide in Mongolia to help him a little bit with spotting of snow leopards and palace cats. So he was very grateful to get those. They were a big step up from his Nikons that he was using, and I'm very, very happy to have these Swarovskis. So I'm going to take them to Iceland. This will be their first trip. And then obviously they'll be going to Ellesmere Island with me to look for white wolves and polar bears, and then to Svalbard as well. So excited to have those along with me as well. And I think that's about it equipment-wise. A couple of spare batteries for the cameras. Usually it's a fairly heavy day shooting. We're out working with the Arctic foxes. They typically are coming around the house most days. Usually we don't have to walk more than about 100 or 200 meters away from the cabin in order to find them and photograph them. And usually within a couple of days, I've got them coming easily within a 70 to 200 millimeter range. So hopefully that's going to be a lot of very, very heavy shooting. And hopefully we'll come back with some great images, and hopefully we'll have some fantastic conditions as well. I'm really, really hopeful for that. The last couple of years, we've been very, very good with a lot of falling snow, a lot of blizzards, a lot of storms, and that's the stuff I'm really looking for, that sort of dramatic weather. That's when I can make the sort of dramatic photographs that I really, really love to do, and those are the conditions that I really love to work in. I have ordered a whole bunch of new Arctic clothing, camouflage clothing, which I was hoping was going to arrive in time for my Arctic fox trip. Doesn't look like it's going to. Last shipping update shows that it's still sitting somewhere in the US with a plane delay. Unfortunately, that's just how it goes. The winter camouflage clothing I had a few emails about that I was using in Mongolia is made by a company called King's Camo. And they make predominantly clothes for hunters. And that particular pattern I was using was one called Snow Shadow, which was absolutely fantastic for Mongolia. Really, really good. I just decided to order their new pattern because I didn't like the jacket that I've got, that I've been using. The jacket is a two-part jacket with a zip-out inner lining, and I find that that zip-out inner lining is a bit problematic for me. The new jacket doesn't have that, so I've decided to order the new one, and unfortunately it just hasn't arrived, so I'll be taking my old Snow Shadow with me to Iceland. It's not mandatory to have snow camouflage for photographing things like Arctic foxes, but it doesn't hurt in my experience. And typically it may mean that I can get a few more shots of the fox coming towards me when I'm laying down before it recognizes who or what I am in the field. So I'm liking to use camouflage clothing more and more for that reason with wildlife. It's a bit geeky. I don't really like wearing it anywhere else but in the field, but it works. And for that reason, it's worth buying. The other great thing about buying from hunting shops, not that I want to support hunting shops, I don't, but I do find that their clothing is at least equal in quality to a lot of the very expensive brand name clothings that are used by mountaineers, and typically costs a quarter as much. Usually it's more suited to the sort of photography that I do as well, because it's not active wear. It's designed for people to be sitting around in waiting in blinds and things like that, which I'm often doing in the cold. So it just suits me a little bit better. I find it very warm, very quiet, very comfortable. And other than that jacket being less than what I really liked, don't really know how to describe why I don't like that jacket. It's just that two-part zip-out inner lining sort of doesn't really work for me. I find it slips a lot over the outer shell, and I find that it just bothers me. So I decided to get the new one, which doesn't have that. So, but it hasn't arrived, so I'll be going with the old one anyway. That's how it goes. I'm not planning on taking a tripod with me on this trip. at this point in time. I haven't packed yet. You never know. I may end up throwing one in the bag just for the opportunity for Northern Lights if it happens, but I probably won't take one. We'll just see how I go with space. I'm going to try and fit everything into the one duffel bag. Again, I just don't want to travel with multiple duffels. My flight schedule is not great. As I said in my last podcast, I have to go Melbourne to Singapore, Singapore to Doha, Doha to London, and then overnight in London before I fly over to Iceland. So it's four flights for me to get up to Iceland this time instead of three. That's less than ideal. It means I just want to travel with as little luggage as possible. Coming back sucks too, unfortunately. I have to overnight in Perth here in Australia because the Qantas flight doesn't line up with the flight coming in from Doha. That's just how it goes. Anyway, I don't care. These are the last of my points with Qantas and will hopefully be my last flights with Qantas. Actually, I've got one more coming up that I know of, but I'm almost there. I'm almost done with Qantas. So I'm glad about that. I'm really very, very unhappy with the service that that airline is providing these days. So I think that's it. We'll wrap it up there. That's the equipment I'm taking to Iceland. When am I leaving? Today is Tuesday. I'm leaving on Friday. So I really only have Wednesday and Thursday now, and the rest of today, before I've got to go back to the airport again. So it's been a whirlwind trip back to Australia this time. I knew it was going to be fast paced. I've got done most of what I wanted to get done in the office. Some of it's going to have to wait until I get back before I head to Ellesmere. But that's just how it goes. So that's it. This will be my last podcast before I get to Iceland. I will try and see if I can get one done while I'm in Iceland. If I can, I'll do one from the field. Again, we'll just see how we go for time. It's always tough when I'm out there leading trips. So that's it. We're going to wrap it up for today. It has been the 31st of January, 2023. I'm Josh, and I look forward to seeing you out in the field. Take care. Scratch that. It is the 1st of February. Yesterday was the 31st of January. I've got to get my dates right. So that means I've got the rest of today being Wednesday and Thursday before I get on a plane. So there we go. Got to get my dates right. I actually originally thought I was leaving on Saturday, so I lost the day there as well. So anyway, that's how it goes. Take care. See you out in the field.